Hi, and welcome to the International Franchise Association Women's Franchising Network interview series. My name is Alexis Dickinson. I am the Franchise Development Consultant here at Home Helpers Home Care. And today I have the privilege of interviewing the IFA 2019 Crystal Compass Award winner and CEO and President of Home Helpers Home Care, Emma Dickinson. Welcome, Emma.
Hi, Alexis. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm looking forward to this.
Me too.
This should be fun.
Very fun. You know, as a leader in the franchising space, Emma has worked with very, very large brands such as Blockbuster Video in their heyday, of course, Sylvan Learning Centers, and now Home Helpers Home Care. Joined in 2007 and has had record-breaking growth every year since she came on board. So we'll kind of jump on in, except I did want to highlight one thing. I think, you know, record-breaking growth is wonderful, but I think as your best achievement, wouldn't you say that me being your daughter would be number one?
I absolutely would agree with that. Okay. That is my best achievement in the last 30 years.
Okay, good. 30 years. Oh, gosh. All right. So I guess we'll, you know, jump right in, kind of back from the beginning before I was your daughter. And I know that you went to University of Florida.
Go Gators!
Had a degree in history. So what got you into franchising and just business in general?
So my parents owned their own business. My dad, through a series of career trauma, found himself without employment where I was born in Kentucky. So he and my mom bought a small motel down in Florida when I was 9 years old, and we moved the family to Florida. And my parents had never really, they had not owned their own business. They didn't have any experience in marketing or hiring people. My dad was a carpenter, and he had been laid off from a company he had worked for 21 and a half years. And so we moved to Florida, and we have this business, and failure just was not an option. They had to provide for the family. They needed to invest in their retirement. And so we learned at a very early age what hard work was and the value of education and what integrity meant. And that, you know, Dad said that's something that that is yours, you own, you don't give away. And you make good decisions all along the way. So while they owned this small motel in Florida, my brother and I, who's also a University of Florida grad, we learned how to work hard. That business was 24/7. There was no taking a Saturday off. We had to be there. Somebody had to be there all the time because this was a working family business. So we even went to church separately. You know, my dad and I would go to early service. My mom and brother would go to late service because that's the way it had to be. So I learned how to clean rooms. I was the maid when I was not in school. My brother and I came home every day and folded laundry. The rest of the laundry that was still there. We learned how to check people in at the office, work the switchboard, clean the pool, paint rooms, mow the grass, weed, whatever it took, we were there with our parents and we were working hard every day. And so my dad and mom both taught us the value of education. And so after high school, I didn't intentionally plan to go to the University of Florida, although that's been one of the best decisions that happened. I was originally supposed to go to college with a friend of mine who kind of backed out at the last minute. And so I ended up at the community college. And, you know, I really enjoy education. I think learning is a lifelong opportunity for all of us, no matter what we do. And so I went to the University of Florida and planned on teaching. And, but I still had this great experience of business ownership and entrepreneurship with my parents. I was able to learn from them and grow from them. And so I found out that, as being a teacher, while noble and it is truly a gift to teach our children, as a single mother, that was not going to provide, quite frankly, you, the opportunities that I wanted you to have. And so through a series of luck, I'll call it, decisions. I ended up going to work for Blockbuster Video and was working out in Phoenix, Arizona. As a matter of fact, when they hired me, I was expecting you. And they didn't know that when they hired me. So I remember my boss coming to me one day and saying, okay, it's clear that you're going to need to take some time off.
Yeah, you think?
About how long are you thinking? And so I ended up going into their training department and doing corporate training. I had store operations experience as well with them. I worked through a variety of roles. And I really enjoyed my time in training because I felt like it gave me the opportunity to stay true to what I'd studied. But then I realized when I was managing stores for them and districts and franchise operations there at the end, domestic franchise operations, that you really get to teach in anything you do. And so I went into the franchise department. It was probably about 7 years into my time with them. And I was the first female franchise business consultant they had working with franchisees. Great opportunity to learn and grow from some really experienced and talented people that worked on the leadership side at Blockbuster as well as our franchisees. And so I ended up in franchising because I had a great opportunity. And I had somebody who believed in me enough to want to mentor and teach me as I continued to grow with the company. And I was really fortunate that an organization like Blockbuster, when, you know, they were in their heyday, to be a part of that. I remember when I accepted the job, I was talking to my grandfather, and my grandfather said to me, "What are you doing? That's a death knell in your resume. That company's going to be gone in a couple of years." And my grandfather was incredibly smart. He was a great investor. And he just thought it was a horrible decision. And then as I look back on it, I credit a lot of where I am with Blockbuster today, with Home Helpers today, and in the franchising community because of my time with Blockbuster and being able to have just incredible mentors along the way. From there, I had the opportunity to join Sylvan Learning Centers. And Sylvan Learning Centers, obviously a great mission. Being able to work in children's education again was an opportunity for me that I enjoyed. I had responsibility there for both domestic and international franchising. It was a great company. Again, great leadership and mentorship during my time there. And I was only there 3 years, but I've been fortunate that all three, I worked a career of almost 30 years in business and mainly franchising, that I've worked for three companies in that 30 years, and that they all three had very strong missions, which was very important to me. And today with Home Helpers Home Care, it's an exceptional business model. We have exceptional franchisees and staff all around. And I am truly blessed to be able to be a part of an organization that helps tens of thousands of people live their best lives possible in the comfort of their home versus being an institutional for facility care. So what better place could you be?
I agree. And I actually, you said something about Pop that, you know, when he said it was, you know, Blockbuster was going nowhere. How old was I at that point?
Well, you weren't born yet.
Okay, because I remember when, you know, you had been with Blockbuster and we were living on Leatherwood Drive. And this was when you sat me down and said that, you know, things are going to be a little different. I'm going to be traveling a lot. And that's when really, you know, being a single mother, a working single mother, I'm sure got even more challenging. Mm-hmm. But I remember having a blue Polaroid camera. We were sitting on the ground in my room. It was you, myself, and Abby, our dog at the time. And you got the call about the job. And I still have a Polaroid of this day that I wrote, Mom got the job.
I remember that. I remember being so worried because as a single mother, and we didn't have family, if you we've never had family where we've lived. Yeah. This is the closest we've ever had family, and that's 3 hours away. Mm-hmm. And I was so worried about how was I going to take on this new, incredible opportunity with Blockbuster. And as a single mom, I think you were 8 at the time, okay. 7 or 8. And I remember thinking, how am I going to be able to do this as a single mother, knowing I'm going to be traveling several times a month? But I still had the opportunity, too, to be able to work from home when I was not traveling. Mm-hmm. So it was this mixed, you know, I was going to be able to put you on the bus and get you home off the bus and get you to soccer practice or basketball or dance or whatever you were doing. But there were going to be days where I was going to need help. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate to be able to have good help along the way.
Yeah, I think now, you know, being that I'm a mother now and I'm seeing, you know, how difficult certain things can be. And she's only 4. So I applaud you for everything. You did not miss. You maybe missed a handful of you didn't miss much. You made every soccer game, basketball game. So I applaud you for that, you know, and I
wouldn't have missed it.
I'm so grateful for it too, because, you know, now that I'm in franchising and having such a close role model, you know, just in general, but specifically for this, you know, it's very important to me, and I'm very grateful, you know, to have you, you know, as a resource for that too. But speaking of role models, I did want to kind of get into, you know, you talked about family and how important that is and that you had a strong background with that, and it's trickled down to me. What would you say for those who don't have a strong, you know, family support system? Where do they find these role models, and who are they?
Well, family, certainly we all think of family as being defined by blood. Mm-hmm. But family isn't necessarily defined by blood. You know, family is what you make it. And, you know, As I said, I didn't have any blood family here, and I was going to have to rely on the goodness and kindness of others to be able to be a great role model for you. And so I was fortunate, whether it was Jenny or Carol, Chrissy,
and Robin,
that throughout those years where I was working on career, that I had some great people that became family to us. Mm-hmm. They were women who were, two of them were teachers. Well, 3 of them were teachers. And Robin worked at Blockbuster. Mm-hmm. She was one of my store managers at one point in my career. And being able to have just this goodness of others to be able to trust with you so that I could go and make a difference for other people and still be a mom. And like you said, I feel like, yeah, there was a lot of mom guilt along the way. But I think that's true of any working mother, yeah, whether they are home every night or they travel. And being able to just know that you had what became like aunts to you, yeah, that were going to stay with you when I was not there in our home, and your schedule didn't change, and that I could go and make a difference in programs that I was working with and people that I was working with and that I cared about. Because, you know, no matter what you do, whether it's personal or professional, relationships are important. Mm-hmm. And you were wonderful to allow me to continue to do that. I remember in high school, you were going into your junior year, and I sat down with you we were sitting at the house on Huntsman Lane. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, Lex, you're getting older. You're going to be going away to school soon. And, you know, maybe I should pull back and transition into another role within the organization where I'm not traveling. And your response was, no, Mom, I think we're pretty good like we are. I think the reason we get along so well is because, you know, we really value the time that we're here together. You're gone just usually a couple of nights a week on average. And I think we're good with that. And I went, well, okay.
Super teenager. Yeah. Super teenager.
Super teenager is what it was.
Well, you know, this has been great. This has been great so far. And I love the story that you just brought up because I do remember it. But I did want to wrap up this segment by actually borrowing the segment that James Lipton uses at the end of every episode for Inside the Actor's Studio.
Okay.
Yes. So I want you to answer the first thing that comes to your mind for these following questions. All right.
Okay, I'm scared.
You should be. They're not too bad. All right. What's your favorite word?
My favorite word. Yes.
Okay. We can get into that later, why that would be. What's your least favorite word? Don't say no.
There are three.
Okay.
There are three words that are my least favorite. And I try to make a practice not to use them. Just, but, and because. Because I think after anything you say after those three words are excuses. I was late for work because. I would have got that done, but. And so those three words to me can be career killers and relationship killers. They're nothing but excuses.
I'm going to have to watch myself with some of the things I say. What sound do you love?
Children's laughter.
Well, you got plenty of that with Ida. plenty of that.
It is pure joy.
I think so.
Pure joy.
I think so. The screams are pure something. what sound do you hate?
The sound that I hate. Really loud noises startle me.
They
really startle me. I have a very strong reaction to really loud noises.
Yeah, I've never popped out and scared you or anything, right?
No. Yeah, TV shows, you know, I can't do
that. Yeah, even parts of Game of Thrones where,
you know.
And now, last one. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Welcome home, my child.
I don't think he'd say that for me. I think it'd be more eventful, just so you know. But, you know, thank you for answering those. And, you know, in our next segment, we're going to take a deeper dive, you know, into franchising as a whole, what got you there, and being, more importantly, a female in that space and what hurdles that you've overcome. So stay tuned. In the last segment, we talked about how she came from humble beginnings and how working in the family business really shaped you and who you are today. But I really want to jump into the franchising side. And I would like to get advice for young women like me who are looking to move into those leadership roles. And I also want to kind of take a deeper dive into what it's like to be a female executive today. So, you know, we'll jump right in. I know we talked about Blockbuster being kind of where you started to climb that corporate ladder. But where were you when you had that first conversation that you were going to potentially move up to management? You know, who was the person to have that conversation with you, and what led you to believe that you could do it?
Well, I was working with Blockbuster at the time, and I actually came into them in entry level management.
Okay.
When it got really serious that I was going to be moving into more middle management and higher, I was every year with Blockbuster, you know, we were growing so fast. I started when we had about 150 stores, and 14 years later, we had 8,800. And so it was a great company to work for and with. If you had talent and you were willing to work really hard, you had opportunity. And so I was really grateful for that, because it gave me the opportunity to move up fairly rapidly, but to have good training and leadership to do it. And so I knew from the beginning that I was going to have opportunity, because I knew I was willing to work hard. I'd learned that from a very young age. And, you know, in this is in 1990 when I started, and, you know, the world was different than it is today. I remember being one of the first female district managers that I was one of two in the whole eastern half of the country. And I'm talking, you know, these are a lot of numbers, and you're going to meetings when they bring these whole groups together, and Betsy and I were the only two women there. And then I remember having the opportunity to move into the franchise department and being the first franchise business consultant that had ever worked in that capacity in Blockbuster. And at the time, you know, you were starting to see from the 50s on women working outside of the home, but not necessarily in management positions. And so for me, I had a great opportunity to learn from great people. I was one of the few women, though, that in the organization, and it was mirrored in many organizations throughout the country, that you had women moving up the ladder. And it was exciting. It was different. I think expectations were a little bit different. You had to work really hard for anyone. That's true. You had to really prove yourself, though. And I was a single mother on top of it. So really making sure that though my personal brand at work was one that people could trust, that they could count on to get things done, that whatever I committed to do, I was going to do. And working just that much harder to make sure that my work was recognized. I can remember, I think I'm a pretty organized person, and I plan a lot. I can remember thinking every day before the end of the day, and that didn't necessarily mean it was in an office, because I was rarely in an office. I was traveling. I can remember saying, okay, if I get one more thing done today than I could have, that's one less thing I have to do tomorrow. And if I can do that every day, every work day, think about, I mean, that's hundreds of extra things you get done. Mm-hmm. And so being able to commit to that, and then, you know, that there's that saying that today I will do what others won't, so that tomorrow I will do what others can't. And committing to being the one that worked hard, but also worked smart, and that your work spoke for itself, and making sure that, you know, you were just doing the things that the organization expected of you and exceeding those expectations.
Okay. And then I did have a question, just speaking on management. As a female managing people, you know, if you're direct to someone, that can come off a certain way, but a man can do it, and that's just how it's supposed to be. How do you find that balance as far as it goes with managing people?
You know, managing people, it really comes, you're right. I think for those who know me well, I'm a really very emotional person, but that doesn't necessarily always come off in the workplace because I'm somewhat reserved in my style. I think that I can say the same thing, use the same words sometimes, but the perception of that is different. Mm-hmm. I can remember early on in my career, we were living in Atlanta, and I was working for someone there. You were very young at the time. You were probably 3. And him walking in my office, every Monday we did have an office day, and him walking in my office unexpectedly, his office was across town, and making small talk, and then kind of leaning into the desk and saying, you know, Emma, you're doing a great job, but no one really wants to hear about your kid. And, you know, if you want to be successful in business, you know, you keep that separate. Yet I knew his 2 daughters' names. I knew his wife's name. You know, it wasn't that we never had those discussions. So it kind of took me off guard. And so from that point on, I was very, I don't want to use the word guarded, but careful in what I would share. And as a result of that, it came that I was probably a little more, I'll use the word aloof or direct in my early career. Mm-hmm. As a result of that, it shaped me in what I consider to be a negative way. Managing people is all about doing the right thing. You know, the golden rule, which is something we talked about a lot at Blockbuster, treat people the way you would want to be treated. Have transparency, good communication, and, you know, there's doing things right, which is listed in all the policy manuals, and you have to have those as organization to be able to function and manage expectations and everybody kind of understand the rules of which we're going to engage. But there's also doing the right thing, right, which sometimes is different than what might be in a policy manual. But for that individual, it's the right thing, and it's the right thing for the organization. This is a people business. Any organization you're in is a people business. And you can't lose sight of that. You might sell widgets. You might flip hamburgers. You might send a cleaning crew out if you're a maid service. At the end of the day, though, it all comes down to people. And being kind, being firm, being transparent, managing people comes down to, you know, treating them well, treating the organization well, having a great culture with which to do that, and recognizing people's gifts and coaching them up on their opportunities, so long as they're willing to be coached. That's a huge, you know, part of understanding and managing people, is knowing where they are and what motivates them to continue their development and to continue to perform for the organization.
Okay.
I'd like to say it's not rocket science, yet it's one of the hardest things, I think, to master and to get right in an organization.
Do you think when that conversation was had, where he leaned up on the table and he said what he said, you know, I would assume that your biggest motivator was me at the time, but do you feel like you said, oh, well, my motivator is going to be to take your position or to continue to, you know, not necessarily to prove it to anyone else, but just almost just for yourself?
You know, I was really hurt that day. I was really hurt because, as you talked about in the first segment, I do believe that being a mom for any mom is their greatest achievement. Mm-hmm. And it truly my pride and joy. And so to have someone kind of want you to downplay that and to kind of keep that separate, I was really hurt. I was motivated in my early career not by any one person or thing. It was certainly a primary motivator was to provide you and my family the best opportunities I could. The real driver, though, was I wanted to be the best me I could be, that I wanted to use the gifts that God gave me and the upbringing I had from just the most incredible parents and do the best me I could. And, you know, you've heard the passage, to those much is given, much is expected. And I felt like I had been so truly blessed, and there was going to be great expectations on me, great expectations from you as being your mother, from my parents who passed away really before my career took off and didn't get to see this, but I feel like they get to see that from heaven, that I wanted them to be proud of me. And I looked at all the women in my family and what strong women they were and whatever they did, many of them housewives, teachers, or nurses. But they were so strong that I just knew I came from such great stock and that I had something that I felt like I could contribute. And I was going to do the best I could to be able to do that. And I was very blessed to have great mentors that saw that, encouraged me, trained me, gave me opportunity. And I wasn't going to let anybody down. More importantly, I wasn't going to let myself down.
Right.
I've had failures along the way within positions I've had. However, I've at those times that you have those failures, coming back to doing the right thing has always been important, and owning whatever that was. And I think that's really how anybody gets ahead, I think especially for women.
Okay. And I think, and I love that feedback, you know, especially me being in this space, and, you know, trying to advance in my career. But I do want to fast forward to 2004, okay? You made a huge, huge, huge impact on Blockbuster when you were there. But then, you know, it was time for something new. What made you make the jump to Sylvan Learning Centers?
Yeah, so, you know, I had a great career at Blockbuster, and I really wasn't looking to move. I had a great opportunity to join a a brand that was at the time about 27 years old. It was in the education space, which was, you know, very passionate for me. With Blockbuster, I was commuting into Dallas every week as my office.
Yes, or
I was traveling somewhere. And then with Blockbuster, I was going to be, with Sylvan, I was going to be traveling into Baltimore. So it was a little bit easier of a commute. You were getting older. It was a great opportunity to join a global brand like Blockbuster. However, they were at a kind of inflection point in their time, and I felt like I could come in and make a real difference. And so I made that decision. I say, if you want bold change, you've got to make a bold choice. And I think people make decisions out of either compelling trauma or compelling opportunity. I've been so fortunate in my career not to have compelling trauma. Not to say it hasn't been without mistakes, as I said. I've had great compelling opportunity. And with Sylvan, it was a compelling opportunity at a time in their brand that I felt like was right for me. And I felt like I had done a great job at Blockbuster. This gave me an opportunity to continue what I had learned there and take to a different brand and make an impact there.
Okay. And I, you know, leaving Blockbuster at that time was obviously the right move, you know, seeing what happened now. And then you had a very successful, shorter stint than you did at Blockbuster at Sylvan Learning Centers. How did that play out to Home Helpers? You know, what? How did that conversation happen and all of that?
So there's a few people along the way that I really cite in my career as being great mentors and being able to talk to them about my career. I remember my last time, a bit of time at Blockbuster, I reported to a woman named Eileen Terry. And Eileen, I still am in contact with today. You know Eileen. She was just such a rare gem. The first and only EVP at Blockbuster, female EVP that I think they ever had. Mm-hmm. And she's been very influential, and still I am in contact with her over decisions. Peter Cohen, who was at Sylvan, you know, Peter was also just such a gift for me in being able to help shape my career. Great mentors, and just truly, I would not be here without them today. They taught me a lot about business. They taught me a lot about people, and they taught me a lot about, you know, what not to do sometimes. And sometimes learning what to do is great, but learning what not to do can be more important, especially if you are, for me at Blockbuster, it was a predominantly male environment. Sylvan was different, but I started going to IFA meetings when I was at Blockbuster. And I can remember going to the Women's Franchise Networks, the committee's leadership meetings then, and I think my first one was probably like 1998 or 9, and sitting in a room, and there was maybe, and it was only open to women at the time. It was a leadership function, but it was through the Women's Franchise Committee, so it was only women, and there might have been 30 women in the room. That was it. And you're looking at the International Franchise Association, and there's not many women. And so looking and emulating strong women that I saw there, like Dina Dwyer Owens, Melanie Bergeron, Catherine Munson, Julia Stewart, who at the time was with IHOP, she was at the very first meeting I went to, and she was the guest, the keynote speaker, was just eye-opening, that you could see these incredibly bright, gifted women who were at the top of their brands. You know, all of them still active today in some way, shape, or form. And I had the opportunity recently to spend some time with Dina Dwyer Owens. And, you know, she is the epitome of a strong female leader in this space. And over my career, I've taken, you know, learnings from Eileen and Catherine and Dina and others to just be able to, I feel, be the leader that I am today. Now you go to these leadership meetings, and I go every year. I get so much out of them. I think it's a great environment for any young person trying to cultivate the skills into leadership positions, but certainly young women in franchising, which we still need more of in leadership roles, to be able to have access and interaction and network with these just icons in franchising. But now I look around this room and there's hundreds. You went this year. You know, there's hundreds of women there. And now we have men who come, and men, there have been some just incredible men who have been keynote speakers at those events. And being able to tap into that early in my career, and then leveraging the work of that I had the opportunity with Eileen Terry and Peter Cohen, and I'd say Randy McKee as examples, that's priceless. You just can't, that takes time to cultivate. You can't buy it anywhere. There's no degree that was going to buy that for me. Mm-hmm. Although education is critically important, it wasn't going to buy what I got in experience.
And then this year, you got to stand up in front of all of them and present your award-winning speech for the Crystal Compass Award. But I did want to, you know, cut into some more questions.
Okay.
Just so you know. And now this is not going to be the same as before. You remember, or you've seen Ellen's burning questions, right?
Yes.
This is Alexis's burning questions. Okay, so you only get 3 seconds to answer, though.
Do I have to press the button?
You can pretend.
Okay.
All right, you ready? So if you could be any superhero, what or who would you be?
You know, I don't know a lot about superheroes, so it's probably an unfair question, but Wonder Woman.
The first one you could think of?
That's the only one I can think of, but I just remember her being so incredibly gifted, and certainly she was beautiful and, you know, athletic. And
that's going to be your Halloween costume this year,
That'll be
right?
My Halloween costume this year.
What are you afraid of?
What am I afraid of?
I know some things.
All kinds of things, actually. You know, I was at a meeting this last week, and the keynote speaker talked about you having a mental heckler in your brain, mm-hmm. and I have a mental heckler in my brain that tells me all the bads. I'm a constant worry wart, I worry about everything. I don't know that I'm afraid. I will say I'm afraid of snakes.
Yeah.
Keep rodents.
Going. Yeah.
Any kind of rodent, including the little guinea pig you had, and reptiles, rodents, those are the two main ones.
You know, we'll leave it at that. Uh-huh. Who's your biggest celebrity crush?
My biggest celebrity crush. Kevin Costner.
Really?
Yeah. I
learn something new every day.
I like Kevin Costner in most of his stuff, but right now I'm really into his series on Yellowstone the Paramount Network. He's really good in that.
He's been telling me to watch that, and I haven't.
Yeah, it's really good.
And I'll never view it the same either now, because that's your celebrity crush. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. And what's your guiltiest pleasure?
I don't take a lot of guilty pleasures, actually. I would probably say a massage
and
any kind of sugar
there
sweets.
There you go.
Any kind of sugar sweets that you can provide, donuts, pie, cake, ice cream.
I'm pretty sure you've tried every donut spot in the city, right?
I have.
And then last but not least, what is your biggest pet peeve?
There's two, actually.
Oh,
so do
man.
I have to narrow it to one?
I want both of them.
People that are late. I think that is disrespectful to others you're meeting with. And the second is sloppiness.
You hate that.
I hate that. I can't deal with the chaos.
Well, that was fun. And thank you for answering those. And we'll kind of dive more into some more fun questions into our next segment. You've already taken a look at, you know, what your background is and what your path to leadership has been, but I really want to know, what does the future hold? You know, where do you see Home Helpers going from here? And, you know, when you first started at Home Helpers, gosh, that was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
What were your biggest challenges?
So I started with Home Helpers Home Care in 2007. Again, thought it was a terrific business opportunity, and it was a compelling opportunity for me to join an organization that I was so passionate about the mission and had a nice business model to be able to make a difference. And when I joined Home Helpers in 2007, there were a lot of challenges, ones that I really didn't anticipate when I joined the brand. One I'm so grateful that I had, though, in those early years. I joined as the chief operating officer in 07. I was promoted to president in June of 08, so less than a year. That was the plan all along. When I came in, the infrastructure for support was in need of real help. We had a franchise network that was so wonderful and accepting of me in the early years, in that early time, yet there were still challenges in how they had done business and where we needed to go. And so really working closely with them, learning all of the pain points that they had, and that's true in any franchise model, by the way, learning what was necessary to take to the next step. You mentioned in the first segment that we've had record-breaking growth every year, and that's true. That doesn't come, though, unless you've got a whole lot of people working together, and that's from your leadership team all the way down to, in our model, the care deployment in the home. You know, we're not, this is a different kind of unique model in that you don't come into our store and buy food or products. We literally have our best asset, which is people, delivering care in someone's home. And so putting together processes and programs that ensured that we had exceptional care no matter where you were in the country, providing our franchisees the tools and resources that they needed to be successful, managing through relationships that in some cases were tarnished and harmed, and being able to demonstrate that, you know, we were going to deliver on what we said we were going to do, and we were going to do so with integrity. We didn't always get it right in the early years, and even today, you know, there's nothing that's perfect. However, being able to come in and do some needs analysis, recognize what needed to be addressed first, second, third, and fifth, and 15th, or whatever that was, and then putting together teams that really could make a difference, and we're committed to making a difference, and just working very closely with our franchisees and as much communication as we could and as much collaboration as we could so that they were a part of the changes and certainly the successes that we've had along the way. And that wasn't a 30, 60, 90 day initiative. That was years. It was years. And then seeking feedback all along the way. I'll never forget, I sent out a communication soon after I joined the organization to all of our franchisees talking about how wonderful, you know, the brand was and how great I was, you know, how thankful I was and how much I was looking forward to working with them, established brand, et cetera, et cetera. And I had a franchise owner, very successful franchise owner, send a communication back to me that said, great, you're on board, can't wait to work with you, but let's take a time out. And let's talk, let me tell you a couple of things that I think you should know. And that franchisee is, you know, a longstanding franchisee, was in our network for many years, is in our lifetime hall of, our Hall of Fame Lifetime Achievement Award. We only have four in our history, and he and his wife are one of them. And I can't tell you how valuable, though, that feedback was in the very beginning. Then we got thrown a bit of a monkey wrench, too, in those early years. We lost two of our franchise leaders very early on, one to a car accident. He was at the time our top franchisee from a system revenue standpoint, and had a wife and two very young children. Was a huge leader in our community. And then shortly after, within a couple of years, lost another gentleman, John Squires, to cancer. Both of these gentlemen, I felt like, were strong brand advocates. They were certainly wise counsel to me and many others in the organization. So we were managing through a lot of change and improvement. And change is a good word. You know, it should be. I think about it as improvement. And then dealing as a community, as a network, a family, with these two losses in a very short period of time, that was a big challenge. And, you know, certainly when I walked into Sylvan, there were challenges. And there's challenges in any organization, even today at Home Helpers. There's so much good, though, that it certainly balances out. Part of my role is to, you know, look at the strategic vision and see what's on the horizon and what the landscape looks like, and being able to get buy-in and a community and network to go. When you're making improvements, and a lot of them, and you're working with this loss of leadership, you know, that was a challenge. And I can tell you, in some ways, it made us as a network and a community stronger for those who were our franchise owners who were in the system already with us and knew those individuals. And in some ways, that made us stronger. And we still feel the impact and effects of their leadership. However, you know, just that part was a dynamic that I had not dealt with in the past. And, you know, I still think back to their words often.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, with all that being said, being what you've gone through, what the organization has gone through, all of that, what are you the most proud of?
Mm. You know, when I celebrated 10 years with Home Helpers, the leadership team took me out to lunch, and the question they asked me was, if you had to use one word to really provide an example and your thoughts on your 10 years with Home Helpers Home Care, what would it be? And I said, you know, the word is proud. I'm very proud of what this organization has done in the last 12 years since I've been a part of it. Certainly, I am grateful for the management and leadership that founded this organization and that had the foresight to allow me to join it and to lead it, and to those franchisees that were here before me. They certainly have had a strong hand in building the legacy of our brand, and we're where we are today because of those effects and impacts. But I gotta say, the last 12 years, I'm really proud of what we've done as an organization. Record-breaking growth every year. We're in an industry that is expected to continue to grow for decades, really. We were cited as by Entrepreneur again as being one of the in-home care as being one of the top five most profitable franchise sectors. You know, this is a business of caring about people. It is still a business, though, and we want to make sure that we provide exceptional care to the individuals of the families that we're trusted to do. And, you know, there's been so much along the way, and so many that have had a hand and an impact in where we are and where we're going, that, you know, I can't imagine being able to have done it differently or to have done it with different people. Those relationships that you build, I still have relationships from when I was with the Blockbuster, and Sylvan, and now Home Helpers. You know, this franchising model is all about people and relationships. This is a unique business model that is a huge economic driver of the U.S. economy. As a matter of fact, franchising provides about 3% of the gross national product. And it's projected to continue. It is the largest fueler in the job economy of jobs. And it's a huge factor now of women who are going into business for themselves with a known brand to set them up for success. There's just so many wonderful things about the model. And certainly we at Home Helpers are proud to be part of that. And, you know, I'm just grateful for every day that I get to represent the Home Helpers brand, our franchise owners, and the communities and clients that we serve. I just can't imagine not having this experience. It was the best decision I made. You know, that if you want bold change, you got to mm-hmm. make a bold choice. This was a bold choice at the time for me 12 years ago. But it was a mission that I was very, very personally drawn to because of, as you know, our family background and caring for family members. You know, my grandmother with five strokes and 18 years of in-home care, my mom with three, my dad passed away of cancer. I've had several uncles, cancer, aunts, Alzheimer's and cancer. And so we've as a family had to rally around and help care. So I understand what our communities and the clients that we serve, I understand exactly where they are. Mm-hmm. And being able to have an impact and a role in that, I'm just grateful every day.
That's good to hear. And let's break the cycle, by the way, on the family history when it comes to that kind of thing. And, you know, we're talking about franchising being a unique business model. And, you know, there's McDonald's, there's Dunkin' Donuts, Stanley Steamer. I mean, the list goes on and on. What makes it so special and what makes a great franchise owner?
Great question. So why the franchising model is so special? It allows individuals who never would have or could have gone into business by themselves, for themselves, to do exactly that, to be a business owner. I can tell you my work and being around the International Franchise Association for many years, I talked to franchisees of a lot of other concepts besides Home Helpers. And the one thing that I hear over and over again, I say, did you ever in a million years believe that you would have the opportunity to own your own business and to be as successful as you've been? And they said, there's no way. And they always point back to the help and support that they got from their franchisor, the brand that they chose to align themselves with. And aligning and choosing to align yourself with a brand, you've got to make sure that it's the right values for you, that you share similar values and mission. Mm-hmm. That is incredibly important. But it gives individuals the opportunity to move from the middle class into a different way of life. I asked one of our franchisees, very successful, he had a background in supervising on the manufacturing floor of a plant, you know, what, you know, could you have imagined that you would have this much success? And he said, not in a million years, not in a million years would I have thought that I would be working for myself, calling the shots, making the decisions with educated, you know, help and support from the franchisor and be able to provide in what he has intended is a legacy for his family. That comes through franchising and being able to be part of a tapestry in this country that is the American dream, that allows people to own their own business, that allows people to have good resources and support around them rather than doing it from the ground up. And often people don't think about franchising as being locally owned businesses. And that's an education that I think we need to have with everyone. That Applebee's, there's a good chance that it's locally owned and operated, as an example. Or McDonald's. Yes, they have this great brand behind them, but I assure you, there's a franchisee that owns that McDonald's that is putting their life savings in, and they're working hard every day with their sweat to be successful and to make a life for their family. That's at the local level. And so I think that that's what we really need to focus on, is that it fuels the growth in the local economy, builds jobs for people that wouldn't have that opportunity, and it helps families build a lifestyle for themselves. It's a huge, they take a huge risk to do so. They invest their life savings, but it is a business model that works. Mm-hmm. But it is a locally owned and operated business.
Well, I want, and before we lose time here, I want to make sure that I wanted to get some advice before we close out. If you had three pieces of advice for a young woman entering the franchising world, what would you tell?
Oh, wow. It's hard to get down to three, but I'll tell you that what has served me well. Be honest. Work hard. And you're going to have to work harder than those around you. If you do what everyone else does around you, you're going to be average. Mm-hmm. And it, let's face it, it's not really hard to be average. It's not hard. To be better than average, you have to work a little harder. You have to work smarter. So be honest, work hard, and really go after what you want when you get that plan. And I'll give you a fourth. Find good, at least one good, if not several good, mentors or trusted advisors who have been there before you, who can, if you're willing to take direct and honest feedback, can really help shape your career. And so there are really four that I would provide.
Well, I'm happy with the fourth.
I have to ask you a question though, before we wrap up.
Okay.
So as we've shared in the other segments, I was a working mother, single mother, from shortly after you were born. And so you had to live with a mom who had an unorthodox kind of path. You know, what was that like as a child growing up? I mean, do you feel like you missed anything?
I don't feel, that's interesting. I don't feel like I missed anything. I think I actually gained a lot more than people who live that traditional life do, because I was by myself a lot, you know?
Well, you had
travel.
To be caring with
no,
you.
No,
let's be
yeah,
clear,
yeah,
you weren't
yeah, yeah.
alone.
Very, very true, very true. But I was, you know, I was doing things on my own a lot. I had to learn my own way, but you were always a resource I could tap into. You were always accessible. You could be in a huge meeting and it would, do you need me to step out? You know, just certain things. But I'm very grateful for it, especially now being where I'm at. I wouldn't be here without it. And I wouldn't, my path would have been different. And I'm very grateful that you did everything that you did. Because it really got me where I'm at. So I think it was really beneficial, to be honest. I
just
really
curious.
Do. I really do. So, oh, that was touching, wasn't it? But I do want to close with some other questions.
Okay.
All right. So, same Alexis's burning questions. What's something that no one knows about you, including me?
Gosh, I'm a pretty open book. So growing up in Florida, you know, it's a very outdoor lifestyle, and I have been alligator hunting.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there was a season that you could go alligator hunting, or just like deer or duck or whatever the case may be. And I've spent my fair share of time in the woods as a young adult, and I have actually been out gator hunting.
Who are you? Yeah. You owe me.
On Orange Lake, outside of the University of Florida, which is go Gators.
Well, Tripp will be there this year.
Yeah, Tripp will be there.
What's something that you're obsessed with right now? And I think I may know this, but.
Obsessed with? Gosh, that's strong. I mentioned Yellowstone and mm-hmm. that, but I'm watching a series on Netflix called Schitt's Creek with Eugene Levy, and it is incredibly funny. And then obviously always kind of working towards better health and fitness.
I'm going to check it out eventually, I promise. Last question. Who have you spoiled more, me or my daughter?
Well, I've had longer with you to do it.
That's terrifying then.
Yeah, I've had longer with you to do it. Right now, I would probably say Isla.
I'd say so too. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think I do pretty well by both of you, though.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. We love you, and we're very grateful.
Well, thank you. Well, this has been fun.
Yeah, it has. Thank you so much for taking the time to do it. And thank you guys for listening. If you want to give a huge, huge, huge thank you to the IFA, as well as the Women's Franchise Network. This has been an absolute joy to do. For more information on franchising or the Women's Franchise Network, check out franchise.org. And if you are interested in opening your own business in the home care space, make sure to check out homehelpersfranchise.com. Thank you, guys.